You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. The COVID-19 pandemic spelled the end of several public radio shows such as New Letters on the Air, Says You, Ask Me Another, and the popular Live From Here with Chris Thiele. While we hate to see them go, the door closing on some shows opened a window for others. That's what happened on our music station KRNN Juno. When Live From Here left us with a hole to fill about this time last year, it gave us the opportunity to bring on the Arctic Cactus Hour with host Laura Chartier, Sundays at 12 noon on KRNN Juno, 102.7 FM. Here with me now is Laura herself. Hi, Laura, and welcome to Juno Afternoon.
Thanks, Shelley. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. Would you please just introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. Hi, everybody. I'm Laura Chartier, as Shelley said, and I'm the host and producer of the Arctic Cactus Hour, which aired on KMBA for many years before I became the host about 2.5 years ago, and now airs on a number of Alaska stations and a Tennessee station as well. So I'm a musician myself, kind of in my own life, and was totally new to radio when I started the show. So it's been really fun learning and just sort of the kind of journey of getting deeper into the public radio world.
Tell me a little bit about your show. What do you like to play?
Sure. So the show is an Americana music program. So roots music, folk, Americana. But I have a pretty heavy emphasis on kind of like a couple pieces of those genres. So I play a lot of independent artists. That's really important to me to feature folks who are making awesome music, but maybe don't have a big support machine behind them or like a big label behind them. So it's kind of one way that we can get those voices out there. I do play a percentage of Indigenous Americana artists on the show too. That's something that's kind of like grown as the show has grown. And then the other big thing that's sort of a feature of the Arctic Cactus Hour is new music. So I would say at least half, usually more than half of what I play any given week is brand new music, like literally last few months usually. So again, it's kind of, you know, that's just sort of where my tastes have led me with the show, is featuring new stuff in those genres to kind of introduce people to what's coming out.
And you said you weren't the original host of the show, but I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about how it got started. And also, what does the name mean, Arctic Cactus Hour?
Yes. So Jim Stratton was the creator of the Arctic Cactus Hour on KNBA in Anchorage. And at that time, he had a partner that he did the show with as well. And I think the name, as he has explained it to me, the name Arctic Cactus Hour sort of just represented kind of the kind of music they play, like cactus meeting some of the sort of like twangy folk Americana music that would often be on the show, but of course airing in Alaska. And I think Jim was the host for like 18 years, a really long time, just like a stalwart on KNBA. And so when I took over the show after Jim retired, I was like, I got to keep this name. Like, this name is awesome. We got to keep it. And he was like, yes, keep it. So I'm very lucky that I sort of walked into the Arctic Cactus Hour that way.
So you've done the show on a volunteer basis. Can you tell me a little bit about your process? How do you record it and produce it? Do you do it at home? Has that changed during the pandemic, or what's that all been like for you?
Yeah, totally. So I've actually always done the show kind of remotely at home, even when I first started pre-pandemic, you know, in Anchorage. And I have changed my production it's kind of always evolved, as you guys know, like you're always kind of improving your system. But so it's never been a synchronous show for me. Jim did it for a long time, always in the studio at KMBA, but that's just kind of how I began. And it's a format that works really well for me for like a variety of reasons. And when I'm getting ready for each week's show, I'm kind of always thinking about the show. I'm always listening to music. I'm always making notes of kind of who I might want to play in the next couple of weeks. And these days I'm based in Nashville. So I'm just exposed to like a wider array of what's happening in folk and Americana than I had been previously. So I try to just keep an ear out for new stuff, obscure stuff, or just lesser known stuff that sounds cool that I want to share. So it's kind of like a little bit of an amorphous blob every week as I kind of coalesce those notes and sort of figure out what's new and what I want to play that week. And then as far as production, I recorded at home. One of the setups, I kind of bop between different setups. I've got one on the call right now with you, Shelley, where I use like a Focusrite Scarlett setup. I've done it a few different ways. I can't promise that I won't keep changing it as I learn more. But yeah, that's kind of generally how it works.
Oh, that's really cool. And syndication of the Arctic Cactus Hour, I think you said that began after you took over as host.
That's right. Yeah. So it was just a KNBA show for you know, a long time. And then I think maybe it was about a year or so after I had took up the show that I first got it airing on another station in Alaska, and then it kind of spiraled from there. So I think the count now, we just added Wrangell. I'm just about to add them to the mix like last week. So I think we're at 8 stations, maybe. I'd have to count for you, but something like that.
Well, what attracts you or draws you or keeps you broadcasting on public media? What is it about public media that you like to be a part of?
Yeah, well, I love public radio. I'm like a long time big listener and supporter of public radio. And for me, I'm especially interested in rural public radio coming from Alaska. Like, that's just meaningful to me to have the show to be providing like a music program like this to rural stations that maybe don't have like a ton of DJs or maybe don't have like a ton of resources, but everybody wants to hear awesome music wherever you live. So I've always been really proud that kind of the majority of the places that the Cactus Hour airs are these kind of smaller rural stations. And then just generally, I think public media plays this important role in public life, especially in Alaska, especially in rural areas. Like it's different than in other places, right? Like the role that these stations play. So for me, I take a lot of pride in kind of being able to be a part of that service.
One of the reasons that we wanted to talk to you today, I mean, it's great that we brought on your show a year ago, but we never really introduced it to our listeners or gave them a lot of background or context. So we're finally able to like take a moment, take a breath and do that. But another reason we want to talk to you today is that you have some kind of exciting news, which is that you're in talks with Native Voice One about national syndication of the Arctic Cactus Hour. So what does that mean for you and for the show?
Yeah. So that's very exciting. Native Voice One is awesome. If your listeners maybe already might be familiar with them, but they've got some really great programs that run through Native Voice One. And something I've been thinking about for a while, and you know, I listen to a lot of the shows that Native Voice One already airs, like Undercurrents and Indigify, that are occupying this really special niche musically and like bringing listeners music they might not hear other places. And I thought, you know, I feel like the Arctic Cactus Hour is that too in its own way. So so I've been in talks with Native Voice One about bringing on the show. And at the moment I've got a bunch of other projects happening. So we're kind of just pausing any launch on that, but it is really exciting to maybe have the Arctic Cactus Hour kind of occupy that same space and also again, be available to more stations, a lot of them being rural stations or smaller stations. And that's kind of part of my sort of mission for the show anyhow. So it's a really good fit in that way.
Yeah. And we also just started carrying Indigify on our other music station, KXLL. So that's Tuesdays and Saturdays at 1:00. Well, congratulations. That seems like a really big deal. I'm very happy for you and happy for Native Voice One that they get to carry your show and help you distribute it. But will it change your relationship with some of the smaller stations? You were talking about how important it is to stay connected to them. Is it going to change the way it's distributed?
Yeah, so actually for a lot of my rural stations, it's going to make things much easier for them to carry the show because a lot of Alaska rural stations are already part of the Native Voice One network and get a lot of content that way. So it's kind of a bonus on my side and on the station side to have the show distributed that way. It sort of streamlines the whole process. For other stations like outside of Alaska and the lower 48, it might be like a little bit of a different process kind of making those connections, but it is sort of a win for, especially for these Alaska rural stations. It just sort of makes it easier to bring it on.
Excellent. Well, I also wanted to ask, when you are in the process of shaping a show, where do you go to discover new music, especially in a pandemic?
Yeah, great question. kind of everywhere, to be honest. So I found a lot of people through Instagram, actually. I'm not personally like a big social media person, but actually Instagram has been really helpful for me kind of following a rabbit trail to different artists. And especially I have kind of like an affinity for UK folk artists as well. And so I've followed many rabbit trails to find some like different like traditional folk musicians on the other side of the pond. So that's one. I do also these days have access to some different like Play MPE and different publicists send me music. So I have different access than I used to as far as just new music, being able to kind of see what's out there. Definitely I use Spotify in the same way as another rabbit trail way. But to be honest, a lot of it's word of mouth, like knowing my fellow independent musicians, kind of hearing what people are listening to. So I kind of take from everywhere and then try to capture that, you know, each week.
Who are some of your favorite artists to listen to and to play on your show right now?
Oh my gosh.
I know that's a hard, question. It's such a hard question for a radio host. I know, I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry.
No, it's okay. Well, I love Samantha Crane. I play her all the time. I've been a fan of hers for a long time, and she is just continuing to put out like a pretty high volume of great music over the last year or two. So you're going to hear her a lot if you've been listening to the show lately. Here in Nashville, there's a duo of two independently established artists, Jill Andrews and Peter Grunewald, who have a collaboration together called Hush Kids, and they just released a new collection. I think it's self-titled, actually, the Hush Kids newest record, and they are doing some amazing work. Actually, the Felice Brothers, they're not necessarily new on the scene, but they've got a really cool new record out that I'm digging. That's probably one of my favorites of the year so far. Black Belt Eagle Scout have been playing a lot more often, too. She's based in Oregon. Those are a few, but gosh, there's so many. Yasmin Williams, I don't know if you guys have been playing her. She's an awesome guitarist. Yeah, I feel like at the moment, there's just this like massive volume of great new music being put out. I don't know if it's the time of year or the year or what's going on, but something cool is happening.
What about Alaskan artists? Who do you have your eye on?
Well, of course, Ava Earl is making like a major splash right now, which is so cool to see. Her new record is awesome. Yeah, if you guys haven't listened to Ava Earl, definitely check her out. There's also, I think about the Jangle Bees a lot, who's an Anchorage band. I just have been kind of following them ever since I first saw them play live. Those guys are awesome. I think Jamie Whiteman's a total force of nature and music. She's another Anchorage-based artist.
Well, what's coming up on your show this weekend? Can you give us a little preview?
If you've listened to the show, you know I have sort of like a soft spot for instrumentals, even though those are not necessarily like traditionally part of roots. Well, maybe they are traditionally part of roots music. So yeah, I'm trying to think who I like I mentioned, the Felice Brothers. I've been kind of highlighting them. I'm probably going to be spinning them again. There's a few Nashville-based artists. Leah Nevins, who I think I'll be spinning again. She's got a new record out. Rachel Bayman. I've spun a lot of her new music. So she's another kind of, so those are a few of the names I have on my mind, especially as I'm thinking about who I might actually get to go see live when all this is happening.
Oh, that's exciting. The return of live music. I love it. I missed it.
Definitely.
Well, those are all my questions, Laura. Is there anything else you want to share with our audience while you're here today before we say goodbye?
Awesome. I would just say if there's something you want to hear on the show, or if you have like a hot tip for me musically, I would love to hear it. I'm always saying to people like, please tell me what you're listening to. And I've definitely had, you know, every now and again, I'll hear from somebody who sends me something I've never heard of. And that's like my favorite thing. So if you can think of something, please send it my way. And the other thing I'd say, and I say this on the show too, is if folks hear something they like on the show, like go check it out. I always put the playlist on the website and like think about maybe buying some music. And it's just a weird moment for musicians it's a weird moment for everyone, but it's been a hard year and a half for musicians. So if you like can, and you're comfortable to like buy music and support an independent artist, I would say definitely go for it.
Oh, those are great words, Laura. Laura Chartier, host of the Arctic Cactus Hour on KRN in Juneau 102.7 FM Sundays at noon. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thanks, Shelley. This is great.
This Friday, October 15th, marks the beginning of the Juno Symphony's 59th season with a concert at St. Paul's Catholic Church. And you can imagine the excitement that's building for the symphony's first in-person concert in almost 2 years. So joining us now from the Juno Symphony to tell us what we can look forward to is Charlotte Truitt, Executive Director. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hello. And also we have Franz Felkel, the Concertmaster and 2021 Fall Season Artistic Director. Hello, Franz.
Hey there. How's it going?
Good, good. All right, Charlotte, let's start with you. Tell us what it means to be back with an in-person concert.
Well, it's very exciting to be at a point where we can do in-person concerts. You know, throughout the past year, we've done virtual concerts, which are wonderful, and we're really grateful that we could partner with KTOO and make that happen. But boy, there's nothing like live music and being in person with people. And so I believe our musicians and the audience, they're very eager to be together again and really looking forward to this on Friday night.
Franz, what would you add?
Yeah, I know the musicians are all very excited to be back in front of a live audience. You know, it's one thing to produce these virtual seasons where we know we have an audience watching later on, not live, but it's another thing to be in the room with the audience, because you know that's what we do as musicians. We want to perform and play for our community.
I also had a lot of fun with the virtual concerts, but they're a ton of work and a big cost to everyone and just not the same. Although they were great for what they were, speaking for myself, yeah. You know, if I do say so myself. Anyway, tell us a little bit about the concert this Friday. I know it's a kickoff to the season, but it's not exactly like a normal symphony season opener.
Yeah.
Right. Go ahead, Franz.
Yeah, so... this concert, we're calling it the Camerata Night or Camerata Concert. And Camerata is a group of smaller ensembles. So we'll start the program with a cello quartet, a few pieces with a cello quartet with our lovely cellist of the Juno Symphony. And then we have a smaller, we have about, I don't know, 25 string players and about four wind players, two flutes and two horns joining us. So we have a just strings piece by Edvard Grieg called the Holberg Suite, which is a great work and really suits for this size of orchestra. And then we have a Wilhelm Friedemann Bach, which was Bach's son, or one of Bach's sons. And that has full strings and two flutes, and it's a really great piece. And then we'll finish the program with a Mozart symphony that has, it's a smaller orchestra size, and it has two flutes and two horns with strings. So this concert is about using the numbers that we have in a safe way for an audience.
Would you like to add anything to that, Charlotte?
No, I would say I think the pieces are beautiful and lovely. They're more intimate, you know. We all enjoy the large full orchestra when there's the main stage concerts, but there's another beauty to this, and it's a little smaller, more intimate, more beautiful. And I think the setting of this concert will be very appropriate for the music as well. We're very grateful to be at St. Paul's Church, which I don't know that we've ever done a symphony concert there. We've done a few things with our student symphony there, but it's a lovely space. It's a beautiful sacred space, and it's very appropriate for this music. I think that everyone will feel very fortunate to get to be there and experience this together.
Yes, and I've also heard that it is sold out. So if those of us listening now, there are no longer tickets available. And it's also not going to be broadcast live on KRNN as we normally would do with a symphony concert. However, I expect it will be recorded. Will there be chances for folks to hear this concert later on?
Yes, later on, we're really fortunate to have Betsy Sims, who is available to do a professional audio recording of the concert. And so perhaps we can have that aired on KRNN later, or maybe on one of our Sundays with the Juno Symphony radio weekly programs would be perfect for that. So we hope to have it out and available in the future, but it won't be live streamed, but it will be available by audio in the future.
For those who are lucky enough to get a ticket, they will also be required to wear masks and provide proof of vaccination at the door. And you're also doing paperless ticketing, so there's no need to print a receipt. You can just check in at the door with your name. I think those are some necessary measures for right now. And I wanted to talk about what's coming up for the rest of the season and how you plan to continue to safely hold in-person concerts.
Right. Well, we do have another concert on the calendar. We're doing a holiday cheer concert December 11th and 12th at Thunder Mountain High School. We've been able to confirm that space. We're working on a extensive COVID mitigation plan that will be approved by the city again. And that concert will be similar to what we had last year virtually. So it'll be a concert where the first half is strings only, and the second half will be brass only. So we'll be able to have a wide variety of, you know, traditional Christmas music that we all know and love in a wonderful celebration together with the community. We will offer two concerts, and the capacity will be greater. So we hope to have at least 200 per concert. But I would say to folks, if you're interested, please, once we have those available on the website in a couple of weeks, get right on so that you don't miss out, because we will have limited seating to both of those concerts as well. And if you really want to be a part of it, we hope you'll get on early and secure those spaces, and then be prepared to adhere to the COVID mitigation plan of masking and so on. And we'll be together for the holidays, which will be exciting.
And Franz, will you
after?
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Charlotte.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, after the December concert, we hope to have our first main stage concert in the last weekend of January with full orchestra under the direction of our new music director. And we are culminating that search that's gone on for about 3 years now. It's been quite a process, but we, the musicians and board, are voting on the new music director. They will be selected in November. And so we will have the new music director on board for that main stage concert at the end of January.
Excellent. Well, that's terrific. Thank you so much for the updates with the Juno Symphony. And I hope you guys have a great performance this Friday. Franz, Charlotte, is there anything else you'd like to share with us before we say goodbye today?
Raffle tickets. We have raffle tickets for sale.
Yes. Yeah, we are always needing to do fundraising, and we do have raffle tickets available there on our website. You can go to junosymphony.org and grab a raffle ticket to help support us. And if folks have any questions, feel free to reach out to the symphony. We're always here listening and look forward to engaging with the community.
Excellent. Thank you again both for your time today. Thanks for being on Juno Afternoon. Look forward to speaking to you again about the holiday cheer concert.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Have a good one.
Thank you.
You too.
During the pandemic, business organizations have had to work extra hard to keep networking opportunities going, and the Juno Chamber of Commerce is no different. Joining us now to talk about some of the challenges and opportunities, Ben Brown, Events Committee Chairman for the Juno Chamber. Welcome, Ben.
Thank you, Shelley. Great to be with you virtually.
Yes, likewise. Let's get some of the bad news out of the way first. I understand the Chamber has had to postpone its annual dinner. Would you tell us a little bit about what's going on with that and what are maybe some alternative plans?
Well, the annual dinner, as listeners will know, is one of the most fun events in the Juno social calendar. It's a great opportunity to put on black tie or other fancy dress and get together at Centennial Hall and just have a lovely, elegant evening of dining, drinking, dancing, silent auctioning, schmoozing, and raising money to support the Chamber's mission to make Juno a vibrant place economically and socially and societally. But, you know, we did a lot of planning for this year. We had two great sponsors, Core Alaska Kensington Mine and Hecla Greens Creek. The theme was All That Glitters, a celebration of mining in Juno and Southeast. And we had been meeting for almost 2 months of really coming up with some really brilliant ideas to have a fun return to an in-person social event. Most importantly, we had very good, earnest, and meaningful and productive conversations with CBJ, with Deputy City Manager Robert Barr. Our mitigation plan was approved. I mean, we were looking at requiring things like proof of vaccination from all those in attendance, mask wearing when not actively eating or drinking, other measures, you know, hand sanitizer. It's things that are familiar to listeners as the pandemic has been going on as long as it has. We were not told we couldn't do it. We just decided that an excessive caution, given the Delta variant and the case numbers and the hospitalizations we're looking at, not so much in our community, but statewide, it wasn't the right thing to do. So we made the difficult decision on our own to postpone the event, I would have to say indefinitely. Mm-hmm. We are on the books for October of next year. We have a date in the spring, but I'm not going to say right now that I know that that's going to happen. So yes, we're not going to have an in-person annual dinner this year. I really want to thank all the members of the events committee, most of whom are community volunteers who are not on the Chamber board like I am. They are just so energetic and full of good ideas, and we were having so much fun planning. But hey, you just have to deal with life, and dealing with life in this context required us to make that difficult decision.
Well, I am very sorry to hear that, but looking forward to doing it some other time when it's a little bit more safer and perhaps a little bit more joyous.
Indeed. And you know, I'm certain it will happen. The question is when, not if, but just a matter of when. But in the meanwhile, as you alluded to in the introduction to this segment, we definitely are doing our best to have fun, generate resources to support the Chamber's work, and continue to allow people to network and to interact with one another, which is such an important part of what the Chamber helps happen in this community.
Yeah, and you were recently invited to moderate a panel for the Anchorage Chamber, which I imagine gave you a chance to see how that sister organization is coping with the pandemic. Would you tell us a little bit about what you learned from them?
Yeah, well, by way of background, you know, obviously both the Anchorage Chamber has Make It Monday forums, and they're either at the Denina Center in downtown Anchorage or at the Lakefront Hotel in Spinard out near the airport, Ted Stevens International. And we, of course, have our regular Thursday luncheons. For many years, they were either at the Moose Lodge or down at the Hangar Ballroom. More recently, we've been doing them at Elizabeth Perachevich Hall with catering by Smokehouse Catering from Clinkett and Haida. Really great food, great staff. And we had just started to have them in person again, you know, as the summer looked like we were really getting the pandemic under wraps. But unfortunately, numbers were declining. So we reverted to virtual luncheons. And this week's luncheon is virtual. And actually, it's really going to be great. It's a couple of musicians who are going to be showcasing the Indigenous Music Festival that the Juneau Arts Humanities Council is putting on. So it was interesting because it was early summer when I was contacted by the Anchorage Chamber and asked, as the chairman of the Alaska State Council on the Arts, if I would moderate a panel on the future of the arts in Anchorage. And when we were looking at an early August date, there was no thought of it being virtual, but that had to be moved because a couple of my panelists weren't going to be in town. And I didn't want to have them Zoom in because I thought, well, maybe we're not Zooming things anymore. We pushed it to the 27th of September. And by early September, it looked like we might not be able to do it in person. But the chamber staff said, well, it's really up to you as the presenter. So I polled my six panelists who were leaders of six very wonderful arts organizations in Anchorage. Half of them wanted to be there in person, half wanted to do it virtually. And I'm pleased to say we had an audience of about 25 people in person, all of whom wore masks when they arrived and had masks on unless they were actively eating or drinking. And the other three were on a big jumbotron in the corner of the room at the Denina Center. And it worked quite well. And it was a good, robust conversation about what the pandemic has done to arts organizations in Alaska's largest city. They all serve statewide constituencies like Perseverance Theater, where I work, does as well. And so I think that was a good example of seeing how hard it is to continue trying to do things in person when we have a Delta variant to contend with. But what I will say is it's important that we try to do things in person. You know, you're there in the studio at KTOO. For a long time, everyone was doing everything from home. And, you know, two or three people at the most were in the building there.
Just the people who had live shows, yeah.
Exactly. And so I really want to applaud everyone for balance, for surfing a difficult wave. You want to get together in person. You want to have that human contact. But you want to do it in a manner that is not going to lead to any transmission of COVID-19, especially of the Delta variant. It's not easy. It's not a one-size-fits-all solution. And you just have to be mindful and cognizant of the risks that you're taking. And of course, the most important thing is making sure that you're vaccinated and try to encourage those that you know and love to get vaccinated. That's the single most important thing the science tells us is going to help us get this thing under control. That's why we were very pleased as a chamber to make that a provision of our mitigation plan for the dinner that we were going to have at the end of the month. And that's why we are still encouraging people to get vaccinated. We had an incentive program with gift cards that we purchased with a grant. And we were very helpful in getting a lot of people who were maybe on the fence to decide, you know what, I'm going to go get vaccinated. And so we also, and I do want to talk about the trick or treat yourself raffle before I run out of time, but we're currently taking the remaining gift cards that we didn't use for that incentivization program, bundling them together, and we're going to have a standalone sweepstakes, if you will, and we're going to give those to people who have been vaccinated. So we want to reward people who weren't on the fence and went out early on and got the jab and took care of themselves and the wider community by doing that. So we're just putting the finishing touches on what that program is going to look like. Our brilliant executive assistant, Maggie McMillan, was making sure that everything was going to be workable, feasible, good for the winners, and not too much work for the chamber staff. So I would say stay tuned for news about that program. And if you haven't heard about the 49th State SHOT program that's being administered by the Alaska Chamber of Commerce, that's also another opportunity for people who've taken the initiative to get vaccinated to enter into a chance to earn a very nice and sizable cash prize as a reward for what they've done for themselves and all of Alaska.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you for making that very important point. There was a clinic over the weekend. I know a few people who went and actually got their boosters. So, you know, I think that, yeah, if more of us do our part, we can achieve exactly what you're talking about. So thank you very much. Ben, is there anything else you want to highlight coming up for the Juneau Chamber of Commerce? Anything that should be on our radar as we sort of move into the fall?
Yes, Trick or Treat Yourself is a progressive raffle that we are going to be doing, and we're going to be doing it masked, live, personally for me, vaccinated, and I think everyone else I know who is going to be there is vaccinated, at the Red Dog Saloon on the 30th of this month at 6 p.m. That's wow. The evening we would have been having the chamber dinner down at Centennial Hall. Instead, Eric Forst, who's one of my fellow chamber board members, in fact, he's the past president of the chamber board, said, yep, you can do the drawing there. So we're going to do that, and we're going to live stream it. But the tickets are limited in number. There's only 250 of them. And we're going to draw all 250 of them, because the 250th ticket wins a $10,000 cash prize.
Wow.
The 249th ticket wins two Alaska Airlines tickets. And Alaska Airlines has been a capital member, the highest level that we have at the chamber, for many, many, many years. We're so grateful for their support of our chamber organization and for the business community in Southeast and for all of Alaska. I mean, Alaska Airlines is a really good corporate citizen. So if people are interested in participating in the Trick or Treat Yourself raffle, they can buy tickets from board members. And I would be happy to sell anyone one who knows where to track me down, although I've sold almost all 20 of mine, but I can get more, I'm sure of that. You can also just go to genochamber.com and buy them online. Thanks to the legislature's action last year, somewhat early in the pandemic, the statutes that govern charitable gaming were amended to allow for online raffle ticket sales. And that's been so helpful to a host of organizations. Perseverance Theater and the Juno Symphony, I can tell you both, but any organization that was conducting a raffle when the pandemic started would not have been able to do this if the legislature had not taken that action. So I want to thank the legislature and Governor Dunleavy for signing that into law. Hopefully that will be extended. There's a sunset in that statutory provision of the end of this fiscal year, which is the end of June next year. So I will be, along with other nonprofits, encouraging our friends in the legislature to make that change to the statutes permanent. Because I think, why not? You know, there's all the safekeeping that needs to be there, and it just makes it easier for organizations to raise funds for a worthy cause. So again, it's the Trick or Treat Yourself raffle. The drawing will be at 6 p.m., and it'll probably take a little while with 250 tickets to draw. I'm threatening to wear a costume because it is Halloween celebrated, and that'll be at the Red Dog Saloon in downtown Juneau on the last Saturday of this month.
Is it a must-be-present-to-win kind of deal?
Oh, absolutely not. Need not be present to win in any way, shape, or form. You don't even have to stream in. You could be on the other side of the world, and we will just zap you a note and tell you if you're the lucky winner. So by all means, don't let that be an impediment to buying a ticket and participating in this great way to support your local Juneau Chamber of Commerce in our time of need when we're not able to have our biggest event, which is our annual dinner.
Well, Ben Brown, I really appreciate that information. Thank you so much for bringing us up to date on the Juneau Chamber of Commerce, and I hope that we can check in with you again soon. So thank you so much for joining us today, Ben. I really appreciate it, and it's good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you as well, and I'll be happy to come back when we have more news to report in the not-too-distant future. So take care of yourself, stay safe and well, and keep up the good work.
You as well. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. Tree swallows are declining in numbers nationwide, but here in Juneau, efforts are underway to help build back this population of birds. Joining us now to talk about that, Brenda Wright, Program Manager for the Juneau Audubon Society. Hello, Brenda.
Hi, Shelley. Nice to see you.
You as well. And Jessica Millsaps, who has taken a lot of the wonderful pictures you've seen on our website, ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, but also works with the Tree Swallow Project. Hi, Jessica.
Hello.
You're both here to talk about the Juneau Audubon Society's Fall and Winter Lecture Series that begins this Friday. And this week's lecture is on the Society's Tree Swallow Research Project, which you are both involved in. Tell me a little bit about this research project. Brenda, we'll start with you.
Okay, but please remember that it's always the second Thursday of each month, not Friday.
Oh, I'm so sorry. So, it says Friday here. I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's probably my fault. I'm an excellent one of doing things incorrectly. Okay, so it's going to be Zoom this month, and it's because of COVID, of course. But we're looking forward to hopefully next year being able to meet in person again, because it is every second Thursday of the month through October through April. But this particular one has been really interesting. They had a program that started in 2005, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and we're just kind of continuing on and learning more and more each year about how we can help these birds, insect-eating birds, that have been 49% in decline in the last 50 years.
And Jessica, what's your role in the project?
I am mostly just a volunteer, but the last 2 years I have been a intern. I help collect the data.
which is very important. And I've read a little bit about this project. It involves tromping around and checking and repairing boxes that are out all over the place and some, you know, pretty wild terrain around town. And I just...
Yeah, I think that'll...
Go ahead.
Sorry. Go ahead, Shelley.
Well, I was just going to say that I just heard something about declining bird populations this morning on Here and Now on NPR and just how it means big impacts on the planet. So how does this project on tree swallows contribute to the global research?
One of the things that we found out a few years ago when they started to notice a heavy decline of insect-eating birds east of the Mississippi, they said that quite possibly we'd be able to supply them, just like we did with bald eagles. Remember that when the bald eagle population crashed? Mm-hmm. They came to Alaska to find some to transplant to the other parts of the country. But when they came to ask us about swallows, everybody goes, yeah, we've got lots of swallows. And they go, but we haven't counted them. So that's when they started to do some really investigative work, especially in the northern part of the state. There's 11 different sites now in the Alaska database, but the ones that have 100 are Fairbanks and places like that. Mm. 100 tree swallow nests, sorry.
Yeah, got it. Well, what's important to you, to both of you, about studying this? Jessica, start with you.
I don't really know.
Do you enjoy going out to look at the to work on the boxes? Is that part of your job as an intern?
Yeah.
And Brenda, what about you? What motivates you to study this, to focus on tree swallows?
Well, if I follow around somebody that's an excellent photographer like Jessica and has excellent ears, I not only get to see more things, but I get to hear more things. And sometimes when I fall in a hole, she picks me up.
Always, has occupational hazard there, right? Well, what will you be presenting in your talk this Thursday?
Yes, this Thursday. And it's going to be on Zoom. And you can find the Zoom link on our webpage or Facebook page. But we're going to talk about the last 3 years because I don't remember. You can remember that far back, but we were in a 3-year drought for a little while, where the sun shone a lot and there wasn't much rain. Well, it turns out that's really affected not so much the laying of the eggs, but the success of the nests. And so that's, we'd like to kind of talk about that and then reintroduce folks to these places that a lot of folks seldom visit that are part of the wildlife refuge or also the sealed trust lands and places that you can visit in Juneau where all these wonderful birds live.
And this question is for either of you. Maybe Jessica would like to answer it, but will you have any tips for individuals about how they can help, preserve the bird populations or slow the decline? Just maybe small things you can do as an individual or as a family, a household?
I hadn't considered it, but I probably could.
What about you, Brenda?
Well, one of the things that almost anybody can do to help stop window strikes, because often you have a single window where the birds see like they're looking all the way through your house to the other side where there's another window. And if you prevent them from striking that, then we'll not lose quite so many birds every summer.
I know it's a little bit controversial, but I've heard that bird enthusiasts would really like to encourage cat owners to keep their house cats inside the house.
Yes, that's very, very much true. The top 10 things that we're not doing to help the birds is window strikes, outdoor cats, pesticides, and sometimes just destruction of habitat. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thank you both for coming on today, and I hope that you have a good turnout for your online talk this Thursday about the Tree Swallow Research Project. And, you know, I, for one, look forward to hearing about how tree swallow populations are just connected in general with the bird populations around the globe. So I appreciate you coming on and giving us a little preview. Is there anything else that you want to share with our audience today?
Well, hopefully, if COVID allows, we're going to actually do a planetarium show next month, and we're going to talk about the birds and the stars.
That's so great. What about you, Jessica? Do you have anything else you'd like to share today?
No, I don't think so.
Well, I look forward to seeing some more photographs from you because I'm a fan. So thanks so much for being here today, both of you, and good luck with the talk on Thursday.
Thanks so much, Shelley.
Bye-bye. Have a good afternoon.
Bye.